And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. Michael Lauck will be joining us in a moment for the news. Today's podcast is number 66 with Chris Bledsoe Sr. He's a nice guy and he has an interesting story. So, Michael, what's going on?
We have a few things going on this week. How are you this week before we get started here?
Well, hey, so nice of you to ask. I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. I don't know if you heard this, but Art Bell has returned.
Mm-hmm.
Art Bell, branded radio's most popular weirdo by Time Magazine, launched his new satellite radio program, Dark Matter, Monday, with Dr. Michio Kaku as his first guest. The show can only be heard on Sirius XM, but the first 12 minutes of the inaugural show, in which Bell explains his retirement and return, has been posted on his official website. You can follow the link in our show notes to this segment, and of course, you can follow links in our show notes to fuller coverage of all our stories today.
I really like listening to Art Bell. There's something about his voice, the way he talks, and he's just, to me, I've always really enjoyed listening to him. But I'm going to tell you a secret. Of course, I just pushed the record button off, but guess what? His shows are up on YouTube. Don't tell anyone, okay?
Well, yeah, I'm sure they are. They always have been. And
yeah.
Yeah.
But don't tell anyone, because everyone's supposed to sign up,
right,
you know, on the satellite radio.
Which you don't need to buy equipment. You can get a streaming-only subscription, I found out. But even that is like $15 a month.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm sure he's getting paid. That's one thing they do on satellite radio is they pay huge amounts to people like him. So I'm sure he's doing very well. Plus, they built a whole new studio for him out there.
Well, they probably had to. I mean, it's... You know, he's been out of the game for 10 years, so you need the update. I'll be interested to see what happens with that show, if he gets the guests still and everything, since it is not quite the same platform that it was before. And I've been kind of surprised. I don't know if have you paid attention. He's been bad-mouthing George a little bit.
Yes, he has. And I got to tell you, for some reason last week, I got a lot of email from listeners about his show, about his upcoming guests, and they weren't really all that positive. And then a couple of people were talking about Nori as well. So, and I have to say, I've been very, very busy lately. So if I don't get back to your email, it's not because I don't want to. I will eventually.
Did ETs warn Northern England of impending earthquake? The Northwest UFO Research Group, which operates in the Cumbria area of England, has concluded that a recent spike in reports of unidentified objects in the skies preceding an earthquake is evidence that extraterrestrials may be trying to warn humans of such events. A similar surge in reported sightings was observed before a 2009 quake in the area. The group also points to similar events in other areas. And although strange lights have been tied to earthquakes by scientists, the group reports that the sightings they have taken include metallic objects.
I have heard and read about earthquake lights and actually seen them. You know, they always happen prior to an earthquake, sometimes even like 10 hours or something like that. They look kind of like aurora borealis a little bit. They're multicolor, and they're really cool-looking lights that happen. And I've heard earthquake lights. I've heard that term before. But objects, I don't know about that. You're saying that people have actually seen objects?
No, that's what they're saying.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I'm just telling you what they're saying.
All right.
Don't pin it on me, buddy.
Okay.
UFO over rugby match, not ET, or a hoax. A mysterious object spotted over a recent Welsh rugby match was spotted and tweeted by fans, much like the recent Vancouver drone hoax. And although the Scarlets of a town that we have in our show notes, but I can't even begin to pronounce in Welsh, have not fully disclosed what the object is doing in the skies over their stadium. They had posted a picture of the drone called Birdie before the match.
So is this Birdie? I was trying to figure that whole thing out.
It's Birdie the drone, evidently, and they won't say why he's there. But there were just a whole bunch of tweets because people hadn't caught that. So it's out there, but they are not like certain planetariums we could mention, trying to fool people or scare people. They're just not fully disclosing what their exciting new project with Bertie is. And if anybody can pronounce, by the way, the name of this town, please send it in. I went to a pronunciation guide to see it, and the double L's, which it has two sets of double L's, and it said not pronounceable in English.
Great. Wow. Yeah. Wow.
That doesn't help.
You know, I bet you a lot of people are beginning to think that aliens just plain are getting into sports. Probably. I'm not sure.
Well, you know, they say the first thing they would be getting is our television signal, so they probably, you know, they watched the I Love Lucy. They probably got the first Super Bowl.
Yeah, Super Bowl number 3.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they're ready to see what's out there now.
Yeah.
They're coming in. They're laying down bets.
They might be betting. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because if you could come here now, find out who wins, say, you know, Super Bowl 30, and then beat that transmission back to your planet.
Oh, wow. They're cleaning up. I knew it. I knew that's what their intentions were all along. Maybe.
Maybe not.
Maybe not. Okay.
All right. New privately owned spacecraft launches for ISS. Orbital Sciences Corporation has launched its Cygnus robotic spacecraft on a mission to meet with the International Space Station. So far, the flight has been successful, and the craft should dock with the station on Sunday to deliver 700 kilograms of supplies. Even though the Cygnus craft is designed to carry about twice as much, this is still the largest payload delivered to the ISS by a private company.
So it seems that more and more private enterprises are getting involved. I think that's great.
Well, I do too, because it seems like our government is paying for less and less.
Yes, and they pay a lot more than these people are.
I have very mixed feelings about the idea, by the way, of I'm going to just go out on the record and be a little bit nationalist here and say, I do not want the Chinese to put a base on the moon before the Americans have a base on the moon. I do not want the Chinese to go to Mars before America goes to Mars. I have mixed feelings, though, about the idea of, like, Google landing on Mars or other private, Virgin Mars One being the first human, you know, I don't know how I feel about a corporation maybe starting to get the credit for these milestones before governments.
You're a true patriot.
I am convinced after, you know, years of pulp science fiction that if anything's going to be worse than governments, it's going to be living under a corporate world instead.
Yeah.
Man steps beyond solar system. NASA has officially determined that Voyager has left the confines of our solar system. The craft now begins a 40,000-year journey to another star system. This star, known as AC+793888, is over 17 light years from Earth. And although this has not received a great deal of attention in the media, having been overshadowed by the new NFL season and that new Miley Cyrus single, it is the beginning of a new era in space exploration and a major milestone for all of mankind. Although just barely out of our system, in fact, Voyager has already sent back sounds from interstellar space. I think we printed a blog with some of my thoughts on this last week. How do you view all this?
I really enjoyed your blog. Actually, it's one of my favorite ones you've written, and I hope listeners check that out. And I do believe it is a giant leap, as you say. You know, I mean, it really is quite amazing that this thing is just still transmitting after all these years and still sailing out there. I can't wait for 40,000 years to hear what it says when it gets to that star system.
Just to tip off what the blog was, it's a very short one because it is a little bit different. It's pointing out that Voyager, not only is it momentous for the science and our own exploration of the universe, we now have solid evidence that you can throw back against skeptics who say, why would you come here? You know, the distances are because we basically picked the star because it was convenient. It was kind of the line of sight place to go. We know we're not going to ever know if the probe makes it. We know it's horribly slow. It's just so, but we did it anyway.
Yeah.
So just because evidently is now an official reason for interstellar exploration. We can throw that back. It's, you know, along with the fact that we really can't necessarily guess why another civilization would do things, we can say for sure that even though we'll never get the answers, even though it's there's no guarantee it'll make it, even though all these things, we did it, so why not someone else?
That's right.
We have included a link to the sound of interstellar space in our show notes.
A couple of things on the sound. First of all, I didn't think there was any sound in space. Am I nuts for saying that? And secondly, it sounds like dolphins or whales or something. It's really a really kind of a scary, unique, almost haunting sound.
I saw it compared to 50s science fiction movie theme songs, the early electronic music.
Now you're giving me an idea. I think I'm going to change our intro music to that.
Sweet.
Yeah.
To that and dolphins.
And dolphins.
And whales.
And baby whales. Yeah. So thanks so much. We have Chris Bledsoe Sr. coming up, and we'll see you next week, Michael.
All right. Talk to you next week.
I'm with Chris Bledsoe Sr. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great.
We're here in Maine, and listen to your story. Very interesting. And right off the bat, we can talk a little bit about that. But I want to talk about what you got going on here. Warner Brothers?
Yeah, Warner Brothers is, I say Warner Brothers for now. It's the Hayes brothers, Chad and Carrie Hayes. They're mm-hmm. screenwriters. Their latest movie, The Conjuring. It came out this summer, and right now it's one of the top hits of the year. It's passed $200 million in sales worldwide, which is amazing.
Mm.
It's a wonderful movie, and they became interested in my life story.
Yeah.
And have an option to do a movie based on a book by Dr. Diana Pasulka from the University of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And she is one of the top religious professors in the system.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to base the book on a religious framework. In other words, basically the UFOs of today are the angels of the old text. So it's going to be highly interesting.
That's how the movie is?
Well, that's how the book is going to be written, and the movie
is
going to
be
based on the book.
Ah, I didn't realize it was that part of it. Can you more or less, I know I listened to your story. It's really amazing. Your son is involved, and that was a lot of trauma. And before we get into kind of doing a nutshell of your story, I want to know, how's your son today, and does he ever talk about it publicly?
No, he doesn't care to talk about it a whole lot, and I try not to speak for him.
Yeah.
He was a young boy he's still a young boy, he's 24 years old, but he was 17 then, and it would have been traumatic for anyone,
yeah,
what happened to him, and I would rather him tell the experience.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to talk about because it was traumatic for everyone. It was the scariest thing that anyone, I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
But, yeah. You know. Now, I just want to pardon the noise to the listener here. We try to find the quietest place here, and it's still in a hallway, and there's a door, automatic door that keeps opening. Sorry about that. And so let's keep plugging along. So can you do kind of a synopsis? I know that it's a long story,
right,
but basically what happened?
Well, what happened basically was in 2007, January the 8th, three subcontractors that work for my father and his company and myself for many years was finishing up a job that was an out-of-town job that was about 4 months long, and they came in to get their pay and to celebrate finishing up, and they wanted to go fishing. So we went fishing that day. It was a nice, beautiful day. On a weekday, I believe it was.
Now, you say you were out of town. Were you in North Carolina still?
We were in North Carolina on the coast at Holden Beach and building a big house. And they were subcontractors, so they did the work. And Chris Jr. and I would go check on them. And we actually drove down the day before and did a walkthrough inspection and said, when you get finished up, come on by and pick up your money.
So you were contracting the job, basically.
Right, basically. And they came in and was celebrating and happy and got their money and cashed their checks and called and said, let's go fishing. And it was about 2:30 in the day. It was in January, so it was about 50 degrees out. And in the nighttime, it would get down in frost, you know, in the 30s, 31 or 2 degrees was forecast for that night. And long about dark, just about an hour before dark, I was very interested interested in maybe looking for wildlife. So I left my son and the other three gentlemen sitting on the bank fishing and took a walk up this muddy dirt road up to this cornfield and walked up on two objects that were sitting on the far side of the field that looked like the setting sun. Of course, the sun was behind the trees. You couldn't see the sun, but it was still light enough, you could see. But when I got to the top of that hill, there were two objects, I would say, were as big as a Greyhound bus, is what it appeared, 40, 50 foot around. They were round.
So was this in a big clearing or something?
It was a field. I say cornfield. It was probably nothing planted that time of year. But it was a dirt road that crossed this field. And we had turned off the hard surface, crossed the field to the tree line. And once you get to the tree line, it went downhill to the river bottom, a valley. The river actually had a ravine down in there. So I come up out of the river bottom walking back up to the field, which is like a 100-foot climb up to the field. As I got to the top of the field, I noticed the other side, there were two objects sitting there that were not from this world. It looked like the setting sun. Orange liquid fire is one way I could describe it.
Now, were they disc-shaped? Were they ball-shaped?
They were round.
And were they above the ground or right on the ground?
No, they were above the trees, maybe 100 foot above the trees, maybe. Mm-hmm. There wasn't much room there between the trees and where they were.
How about between them? Was there much room, a lot of room between?
There were two of them to start with. They were probably, I don't know, a couple hundred yards apart or less. Mm-hmm. And the minute I saw it, it put fear in me. I mean, deep fear. I'd never thought of a UFO then, never studied them, was never in my vocabulary. But the minute I saw it, being a commercial pilot, I knew it wasn't anything from here. Immediately, the chills came about me so intensely that it felt like electricity. I actually squatted down trying to hide from them. And I looked back to make my getaway. I was intending on running. So I popped my head back up and to see if they were still there. And when I did, it actually appeared as if the sky was zipped open and another one came out. And when it did, it flew right up beside the other two and stopped. So they were equally spaced apart. They were side by side. Immediately, I knew they had seen me. I knew it. I mean,
you just had a feeling, or
no? It reacted.
Oh,
it was a feeling too. Yeah, but in my thoughts, I'm running. Mm-hmm. I'm fixing to run, and I look back up over the hill to see if they were still there. I'm trying to make my getaway, and I knew they saw me. They reacted to me. It was just one of those things.
When you say they reacted, did they move or did they pulse?
A third one came out of nowhere.
Oh, I see.
The sky opened up. It's like a zipper zipped it open, and this thing shot out, and it just appeared. Boom, it was right beside. So it put the fright in me so bad that next thing I remember, I'm running. I'm running down this dirt road, muddy dirt road, in the dark. And I run up to the fire, and the guys are fishing. And they're like, "Where have you been?" And I'm like, "What do you mean, where have I been? I've been up to the field looking for wildlife. You won't believe what I just saw. This is what I'm telling them." And they're insisting that they've been looking for me for a long time.
Now, you just said it was dark. Was it dark when you were up in the...
No, it was daylight when I went up.
Now, did you think
all... Well, it was just before dark. I mean, it was like 10 after 5 when I left the fire, and the sun was behind the trees, so I never really thought... It was dark, but it was on the way to there. But, you know, 20 minutes from that point, it would be dark, 25 minutes maybe. So that's my estimation was 20 minutes I was gone. Mm-hmm. And I never knew that any time had passed other than that block of time, 20 minutes. It took a regression to convince me and four other guys to convince me that 4 hours had passed.
Now, have those guys come forward and talked about this?
Sure, they. Yeah. They all reported it with me to move on. Mm-hmm. They did an interview, but they don't want to talk about it now. If last time they were approached, they'd just say it was something that happened a long time ago, and they just don't care to talk about it.
But are their names known?
Their names are known. Yeah. They've asked me not to, to use their names. So.
I'm not asking for their names. I just wondered if they were known names.
Yeah.
Okay.
They were on the Discovery Channel's UFOs Over Earth.
Well, that's right. Yeah.
So they all participated.
Yeah.
And because of the ridicule, they had small children in school, and it's tough on young children. Mm. It was on mine. I have four children, and a couple of them actually experienced the teachers calling them out in the class and getting them up in front to tell about this incident, and they got laughed at, and it was a hard thing.
Yeah,
and
it's
I
sad.
Still feel that to this day. I actually feel like it's my fault that I let it go through that, and they suffered from it. So
it's you can only have so much control over stuff like that.
Creates a lot of pain.
Yeah. And so now your son, you didn't find your son right away, right?
That's right. After they were, I'm still trotting up to the fire. I've not really stopped. I'm still running. I slowed down. I'm, you know, as I'm approaching, I'm like, they're like, "Where have you been?" And I really wasn't paying attention to that. I was like, wow. It was just like this big excitement. I've got to tell them what just happened, and I'm trying to explain about these things hovering in the field. They're questioning me where I've been, and I noticed Chris Jr. wasn't there. So my first question is, "Where's Christopher?" And they're like, "Well, he left 2 hours ago on foot looking for you." And I'm like, "Oh my, it's dark. He's gone further back in the woods. He went on foot in the woods while they took the truck and went up the hill."
So right away, did you say, what do you mean, 2 hours? Did you?
I was so dazed and so hysterical after, and the fear, I don't know, I just wasn't able to think. But I took off, I never really stopped, I just trotted right on by them, and I'm talking back, you know, telling them I finally got in the message, you know, after they questioned me where I'd been. I said, "Well, you guys won't believe what I just saw. There was a UFO up at the top of the hill, three of them." So I make my way to the forest, and I'm shouting for him. No response. Finally, I start pulling the bushes back. It's pretty thick around the edge. And as I'm pulling them back, making my way, I get about 4 or 5 foot into the woods. I'm shouting for him, and I start hearing him coming up from laying down under these bushes. He was about 5 foot back into the woods. He comes up grabbing me, and he's upset. He's pretty well what I considered to be in shock. All he could say is, "Where have you been, Daddy? Where have you been?" And I'm like, "What do you mean, son? I've just been up to the field. I've only been gone for 20 minutes. He's like, "No, you've been gone. You've been gone all night. I've been in here for a long time." Best we could figure, it was almost 2 hours. But he began to describe these little beings, these little people that were 3.5, 4 feet tall, that were glowing. They had goggles, he said, swimmer's goggles, like a swimmer goggle size, round. Mm-hmm. They protruded out, and they were red and glowing, and their bodies were glowing. He described them picking up cans and bottles and playing with them and throwing them on the ground. He said, as was always one, you know, 10 or 20 feet away looking at him. And when one would look at him, it would paralyze him. He couldn't move. He couldn't.
How many did you say there were?
Two.
Two.
He mm-hmm. described two. Mm-hmm. And he said one was always watching him pretty much the whole time. He described the truck coming back where they had left. The other guys went up to the field and out to the main highway looking for me. When they came back, the headlights came down the path. He actually said they went invisible and dove into a pile of brush and trash. And he could see their eyes, but they were invisible. Hmm. Regardless, it was quite a traumatic event for everyone. I led him from that point back to the fire where the other three gentlemen were. And they were pretty well wide-eyed. I mean, very quiet. They were confused about what he was saying. I mean, he's describing this as we're walking up, and I had just come running by. They've been looking, so everybody was kind of on edge. And as we're standing there, hadn't been there 5 minutes, all of us, one of the guys shouted, he was looking up in the sky, he shouted, "Look." And the best way I could describe it, all of us, our attentions are turned, we all look straight up. And it appeared there was like 8 or 9 objects that looked like the star Venus when it's really bright. Hmm. They were all stationary, but they started to move, and they were moving. They'd come together. They'd move away from one another. They'd just zoom in.
Making
all
formations, too? Or?
Well, they were all individual, flying every direction, but they'd come back together, pass one another. And they're just all over the sky. And about that time, next thing I know, there were three of them coming down that landed. But it was a frightening thing. We all left everything. I mean, pandemonium set in. We dove in the truck, leaving our fishing poles, and started up the path. As we made our way up this path, it was a muddy, ruddy ruts, and the truck would just wallow back and forth, and at times the bushes were so close to the mirrors that they would brush the sides. And the guys were shouting and shouting loud, "Go, go." And I didn't know what was going on. I couldn't see behind me because I had...
So you were driving,
yeah,
basically.
I was driving, and there was five of us total in the truck. And all I could see is three people in the back seat staring out the back window, and they're shouting, "Go." One of the guys described this... little being that Junior described came out of the forest and came running on all fours like an antelope, chasing the truck. Chased us all the way up the path, up to the top of the hill.
On all fours?
On all fours, wow. Running like an antelope. Huh. And as we topped the hill to the field where I'd originally gone, I had to jam on the brakes. And I actually asked the guy, and MUFON asked the guy later, what had happened to the one that was chasing the truck, and he said, "I don't know, it just disappeared. It wasn't there, but it was almost to grab the tailgate." But what I had to jam on the brakes because there was this object, these two fiery balls, there were three there, but two were still above the trees, one of them undoubtedly either left and another thing came, or it changed shape to this football-shaped object that was, I described it as spikes, or I would say it looked like spikes, but it looked like the skin was alive. It was moving. It looked like light, I guess I could say, just moving around and around, sort of like helicopter blades going around, but lit.
Hmm.
It was all a terrifying thing. It actually turned after three gunshots. Somebody, we don't know who.
You mean someone was there somewhere and shot
it? There was houses around. Yes.
So someone saw it, obviously, and shot it.
Absolutely. Yeah. There was seven or eight people that actually came forward, called my home, and reported it. After the UFOs Over Earth show hit the airwaves, people started calling in and reporting, wanted to tell their story. They saw it.
Hmm.
Flew right over their house or right over their porch when they were sitting on the porch. This one coon hunter calls me, and I talked with him for a while, and he said, Chris, I was actually on the other side of the river when those craft landed, and I was within a quarter mile, and it scared him really bad, and he actually left the woods with his dogs and his friends.
Hmm.
But there was a single-wide mobile home pretty close by, and we wanted someone maybe to witness this with us, is what we had thought. There was so much going on. Everybody's shouting. We thought the world was coming to an end.
I hear other people say that, too.
I mean, it was these lights. There was this thing sitting in the road blocking our way. We couldn't make it across the field. It's between us and the highway. It's only 200 yards across the field.
Wow.
And it's in our path.
Mm-hmm.
And these two fiery balls are still sitting up above the trees behind those. This thing. So we pull over. I turn off the path and drive across the ditch and into this person's yard. Pull up to his front door and blow the horn. His front door is wide open. There was a storm door, glass door there. And TV was going. Two cars at home. One of the gentlemen jump out and knock on the door and try to get somebody's attention. And the cars were there, but nobody would come. In fact, after it was all over, the next day, one of the guys went back curious and actually knew those folks. And they claimed they were home that night the whole time.
Wow.
Never heard us.
Huh.
And that was all reported to MUFON. So we get back in the truck, or one of the guys that was knocking on the door jumps back in the truck. We back out, turn around, and we're still seeing this object. It's out 150 yards away from us in our path. And we cut back across the ditch and this man's yard and get straightened back out, and we're sitting there. We can't go. We're facing this object. And then as we heard three gunshots, everybody heard it. It was pretty close together, all shots like boom, boom, boom. And we were seeing houses beyond this thing on the left and the right. And so our natural assumption, somebody's shooting at it. They never found out. I don't know if they ever really checked who did that, but it was definitely three shots. So immediately after the third shot, this thing turns. It was setting crossways of the road, and it's football shaped or egg shaped maybe, and it turns across, turns and points straight at us, and here it comes. It's coming at us, and everybody's freaking out. Everybody's really at a high point of the world's coming to an end.
Did the guy get back into the truck knocked on the door?
Yeah, he's in the truck.
Yeah.
We back out, get turned around, and cross back into our path, the little dirt path that goes out to the main highway. And he shares, his driveway and a path that are parallel going out, and they're both dirt. But we had to cross them to get back straight. But long story short, here it comes. It's coming at us. everybody's just ratcheting up louder and louder, and fear and yelling and screaming, and what's going to happen, we don't know. And as it gets closer, it starts gaining altitude, real gradual. And remember, we come up out of the woods, out of the bottom, up to the field. Well, the trees are at the tailgate, and they're about 60 feet tall. So this thing comes over my truck. I have the sunroof open. I could have shot it with a homemade slingshot and hit it. Yeah. Barely clears the trees. And as it comes over the truck, it's quiet. There's no sound whatsoever. It doesn't appear to have spikes now. It appears to be an orb or a solid color, white.
Now, was there ever any time where you heard any sound at all?
Never heard a sound, but one time. And that was later on.
Okay.
So it clears the trees behind us and going very slow, I'd say 20 miles an hour when it comes by us, and then turns towards the north and it shoots off like out of a cannon. So imagine us, five of us in the truck, we had just experienced something chasing us up the hill. Something landing on the other side of the river, and now we've got a way to go. I mean, these fiery objects are still out there. They were there when we left. They're beyond the road, above the trees. We head straight at them. We get to the paved road, and we make a hard go at it, home. And I couldn't go fast enough. I guess I was going 50, 60 miles an hour through some pretty bad curves and went right on through a stop sign and never stopped. They're shouting to go louder, and I'm fussing, and I'm not going any faster.
Was there any other traffic around you?
There was no traffic. It was late at night. It's about 11 o'clock now.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys live about, there's two other men live about 2 miles away, mile and a half, maybe 2 miles from that where we were. And on past them, another 2 miles is where the other guy lives. So they started fighting. Who's going to go home first? I heard some saying, where's the Air Force? Where's the Army? Where's the helicopters? Why isn't anybody here? It was hysterical. On our way home, there's this big clearing. A big cut down, a couple hundred acres that had been timbered out. Everybody's real familiar with this cut down area, being raised there, living there. But it was full of lights. It looked like a city in there. It was totally nothing in that area, nothing. But it was now lit up. So that had us even unnerved even more. So we're all thinking invasion. I mean, we're seeing craft everywhere, it seems.
Mm.
In front of us, above us, landing on one side of the river, hovering in the road in front of us. It was just unbelievable.
Now, before we keep moving on here, have you ever calculated how many witnesses total there was that night?
Well, there was five, counting me.
But other witnesses that came forward later?
They came forward. They called me and this gentleman from the space industry. He actually has been investigating for 4 years, and he has other witnesses that came forward. I don't know how many exactly, but he has other witnesses. There were several that called my home, and I had their phone numbers and their contact info, and I tried to give it to the investigators, and after they did their thing, they never followed up, I don't believe, on the other witnesses. After the UFO show was made, there was no more investigation. And that's when everybody started reporting it, after the show came out.
Mm.
But then we experienced a fire. We had a lightning strike, and it came in the house right where I had just gotten up. I was sitting in my chair watching some television and thundering and lightning outside, so I shut my TV off and walk out on the front porch with my wife and daughter, and this big lightning bolt struck and blew a hole through the floor right beside where I was sitting.
When was this?
This was, this was in 2010 or 11. But what it did is it did $35,000 worth of damage and burned up everything, all my phone numbers. So I have no way of contacting these people.
Oh, I was wondering where you're going with this part of it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So the man from NASA actually had to go out and knock on doors, and he found several people that came forward.
Yeah. Let's see. So why don't we wrap up the story, and then there's just a couple of questions I'll ask you. So is this an ongoing, things ongoing from this point on?
Yeah, it's absolutely ongoing. I have asked. Actually, we've had investigators there that have witnessed some things, but in the paranormal, and I don't understand why. I just want someone to tell me. But after the abduction, the ghosts started. I call them ghosts. Some people call them shadow figures. But my wife and all four of my children and several of their friends have all experienced these shadows walking through the house, running through the attic, opening and closing doors, turning chairs over, big wooden chairs. My dog, Nellie. Grant Cameron, if you've ever heard of him.
Oh, yeah, he's been on the show.
He's a top researcher. He was at my home this past summer, and witnessed my Labrador. And I'm telling him, something paranormal is going on, Grant. And he's, he's there to see, and he's not seen anything really yet, but he wasn't at my house 5 minutes. He'd come up from Florida. And after a conference, and 5 to 10 minutes after he was there, Nellie's laying in the grass next to he and I talking, and we start towards the back door, and she jumps up to go with us and actually squeezes by us and tries to get in the door before we do, how a dog would do. And when she did, I looked, and blood was shooting out of her neck, and it spread all over his legs. He has blue jeans on, and they're just covered in blood. And the dog goes on in the back door. I'd left the door open to greet Grant when he came up, because he came to the back door. She goes in, just blood spraying on the wall and on the floor. It's just everywhere. It looked like a hose pipe. So I run in panic, and I grab her, and I lay her on the ground, and I'm screaming out, "Somebody get me something to put on this wound." And my son, Chris Jr., and his fiance or girlfriend was there. They're panicked. He comes out with a washcloth. Grant's standing right beside me. And I lay this cloth on her neck, and I'm putting pressure on it, and I'm asking Grant, what do I do? Do we need to take her to a bed? I don't know what to do. I'm just panicked. Blood's everywhere. And I just actually pulled my hand up and cloth off of her neck, and the cut was gone, and the blood had stopped, and she got up and wagged her tail and walked away.
Jeez.
So then July the 4th of this year, it was advertised, the city of Hope Mills, which is not too far away, was having a real big fireworks show. So my daughter and my wife and I decided to stay home instead of fighting the traffic and watch Independence Day, of all things.
Yeah.
So Emmy and I, my wife's in the shower, Emmy and I watching the movie, and she's sitting on the floor playing or doing crafts with buttons, a new project she had going on. And I said, "Em, the fireworks were really getting loud. All the neighbors in the neighborhoods in this big subdivision way back behind us had everybody was blasting off fireworks. And it just got so loud that it was interrupting our program we were watching. And so I hit the TV button, paused it, and noticed the box, the cable box, it said 9:27. So I said, "Em, let's go to McDonald's and get a cup of coffee and maybe a milkshake." She says, "Okay, Dad." So I make my way to the back door, and I park my vehicle near the back of the house, alongside, right at the back door. So I have my remote in my hand, my keyless remote, and I'm at the door, and I'm reaching for the handle, and Emily comes out a minute or two behind me, And I hear her shout, "Dad, what is that?" So I heard the panic in her voice. And she's heard me for 6.5 years to describe these fiery balls that were on the river that day. These big round, 40-foot round, fiery orange fire. Well, I get back to her, and that's what she's looking at. It's hovering about 300 yards away, just out back past my garden. My garden's about 150 yards out back. The big one is. There's two out, actually. And it's sitting on top of the trees. I mean, just above the trees. From our perspective, maybe the width of a pencil between the bottom of it and the top of the trees. And I know how far it was away because there's a mobile home park behind it, and they were shooting fireworks up that were going way up above it and exploding, and it looked like the sparkles from it were coming all around it. And it's just sitting there. And she's like, "What is that, Dad? What is that?" And her eyes were wide open, and I said, "That's it, Emily. That's what took me on January the 7th of 2008, or January the 8th of 2007. So I said, "Look," I stood there 2 minutes with her. I said, "Look, don't move. I'm going to get your mom so she can see this." I actually was scared to leave her, afraid she might be gone when I get back.
Yeah.
So I'm running the door, and I'm looking back at her, and I get down to where the hallway turns right. I start shouting for my wife, and she hears me, and I hear her coming up out of the bathroom shower. So I start back to the back door, and I knew I had her attention, so I knew she was coming. So I make my way back to Emily real quick, and I stand there with her shoulder to shoulder, and we're peering at this thing, and it's I would estimate 40 feet across. If you measured a round object from one side to the other, it was 40 feet at least. And it's orange. And actually, this time it looked, it was orange and it was fiery, but it appeared a little bit different inside. It actually looked like it had something square in it that was closing in on itself. And going in and out like so. Just kind of squeeze in and it would relax. It was strange, really strange. But it looked the same object. I guess it was a little bit closer this time than it was last. I don't know, but it looked the same. Other than that part. So here comes my wife out the door. She's got her eyes on it, and she's not saying anything, but she's looking at it. And about that time, I mean, within 30 seconds after her coming out the door, it starts to jiggle. I mean, not really wobble, but jiggle, like a little bit faster jiggle. And it shoots off towards the north, towards this golf course that's north of us a mile, and it goes out of sight. It's not going fast. It's going real slow, but it's moving towards the north. Went from hovering to going. So I'm like, wow, everybody's wow. Can't believe it. My wife, my daughter, and they're all just...
Did you feel vindicated?
I felt 100%, let me tell you. Yeah. It was the most amazing sight to sit there with my daughter and my wife, but really my daughter stood there 4 minutes at least with me side by side and hovering that close and the fireworks booming and above it and around it, and the sound was the grand finale, and the Hope Mills fireworks was going at the same time, and it was pop, 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 but a real big boom. It was amazing. The sight was purely amazing. But so I get her in the truck and we take off towards McDonald's, which is in the direction that it went, hoping we might see it because it wasn't going real fast. No sight of it. We go on to McDonald's and we come back. I guess 15 minutes we were gone, maybe 20 at the most. But when we get home, here's Chris Jr. and his new girlfriend. They're on the front porch with my wife. And his girlfriend's eyes are big as saucers, and he's just wide-eyed and explaining. I mean, it was an exciting thing. It's like, Dad, we were watching the fireworks show, and when it ended, on the way home, there's this cornfield that's just a mile and a half from us, just up the street. And he's describing, he says, Dad, I pulled over. I come down Sand Hills Road, and this thing's sitting about 50 feet above the ground, and it's about 100 yards from the road out in the cornfield, just hovering. Most amazing thing. And his girlfriend is adding to it, and they're really excited. And he said, I said, well, what happened to it? What did it do? He said, well, it actually started shrinking, and it got smaller and smaller and smaller until it just went out. It disappeared. Never flew away and never shot off.
You hear things like that now and then. Similar things have happened. I posted your picture up on my Facebook page yesterday saying that I might interview you. And a lot of people, you know, had a lot of people that know you and liked. But one person sent me a message, and they wrote me this, and I wasn't able to verify it, but they said that you had taken a lie detector test. And can you talk about that?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. That was something I volunteered for.
Yeah.
Everybody with me volunteered for it. All I can tell you is I don't care what the machine says.
Yeah.
The machines are faulty. Mm-hmm. I know I've had dozens of people tell me that the police use them just to bluff witnesses into confessing because they know they're not reliable. Yeah. I know that the man giving the test was with the FBI, and I can tell you the FBI will never admit to me seeing aliens. Do you think they're going to say, yeah?
Well, have you thought about taking a different one or with someone else?
I'm not going back through that. I don't have anything to prove to those that don't believe. This message is for those that are willing to listen. I've been traumatized enough from that. And just to amuse someone to distort it again, I'm not going through that.
Yeah. But what if you pass, though?
Well, if I did, what's it going to prove?
Yeah. But, I mean, like, think of, like, Travis Walton, how many, you know, he took the test.
He had to take it five times, and he's still, 35 years later, having to deal with the lie detector, 38 years later.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair enough.
Plain and simple.
I hope you don't mind me asking that
question. No, not at all. Yeah. I'm just angry because the way it was done, they asked me 34 questions, and they asked them for it's what seemed like 3 hours.
Yeah, I know. They take a long time.
And that was just over and over and over and over, and I told the truth. And the way he interpreted the machine is the way he wanted to. But I didn't lie. I had no reason to lie. What I told is fact. And if this message is for people that want to know the truth. Mm-hmm. And it's truth.
Yeah.
They're real.
All right. Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate you recording with me.
You're welcome.